9:35. That summer and winter signify the state of the regenerate man as to his new will, the alternations of which are as summer and winter, is evident from what has been said about cold and heat. The alternations with those who are to be regenerated are likened to cold and heat, but the alternations with those who have been regenerated are likened to summer and winter. That in the former case the man who is to be regenerated is treated of, and in the present case the man who has been regenerated, is evident from this, that in the one case cold is named first and heat second, whereas in the other case summer is first named and winter second. The reason is that a man who has been regenerated begins from cold, that is, from no faith and charity. But when he has been regenerated, he begins from charity. That there are alternations with the regenerate man, now no charity and now some charity, is clearly evident for the reason that in everyone, even when regenerated, there is nothing but evil, and everything good is the Lord's alone. And since there is nothing but evil in him, he cannot but undergo alternations, and now be as it were in summer, that is in charity, and now in winter, that is in no charity. Such alternations exist in order that man may be perfected more and more, and thus be rendered more and more happy. And they take place with the regenerate man not only while he lives in the body, but also when he comes into the other life. For without alternations as of summer and winter as to what is of his will, and as of day and night as to what is of his understanding, he cannot possibly be perfected and rendered more happy. But in the other life these alternations are like those of summer and winter in the temperate zones, and those of day and night in springtime. These states are also described in the prophets by summer and winter and by day and night, as in Zechariah. And it shall come to pass in that day that living waters shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea and half of them toward the western sea. In summer and in winter shall it be. 14, verse 8. Here the New Jerusalem is treated of, or the kingdom of the Lord in heaven and on earth. That is, its state of both kinds, which is called summer and winter. In David, the day is thine, the night also is thine. Thou hast prepared the light and the sun. Thou hast set all the borders of the earth. Thou hast made summer and winter. Psalm 74, verses 16 and 17. Here like things are involved. So in Jeremiah, that the covenant of the day and the covenant of the night be not made vain, that there may be day and night in their season. 33, verse 20. 9:36. That day and night signify the state of the same, that is, of the regenerate man as to the things of the understanding, the alternations of which are as day and night, is evident from what has just been said. Summer and winter are predicated of what is of the will, from their cold and heat, for so it is with the things of the will. But day and night are predicated of what is of the understanding, from their light and darkness, for so it is with the things of the understanding. As these things are self-evident, there is no need to confirm them by other similar passages from the Word. 9:37. From all this it is evident what the nature of the Lord's Word is in the internal sense. In the sense of the letter, it appears so gross as to give no hint of anything being spoken of, but seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, and day and night. When yet all these things involve arcana of the ancient, that is, of the spiritual church. The very words in the sense of the letter are of this character. Thus are, so to speak, most general vessels, each one of which contains so many and such great arcana of heaven, as to be inexhaustible even as to the 1/10,000th part of it. For in these most general words, taken as they are from earthly things, the angels from the Lord can see in illimitable variety the whole process of regeneration, and the state of the man who is about to be regenerated, and of the regenerate, while man can see scarcely anything. Continuation concerning the hells. Here, concerning the hells of the avaricious, the filthy Jerusalem, and the robbers in the desert. Also concerning the excrementitious hells of those who have lived in mere pleasures. Number 938. The avaricious are of all men the most sordid, and think least about the life after death, the soul, and the internal man. They do not even know what heaven is. Because of all men, they least elevate their thoughts, but sink them and immerse them wholly in corporeal and earthly things. Wherefore, when they come into the other life, they do not know for a long time that they are spirits, but suppose that they are still altogether in the body. The ideas of their thought, which from their avarice have become, as it were, corporeal and earthly, are turned into direful fantasies. It seems incredible, yet is true, that in the other life the sordidly avaricious seem to themselves to be busy in cells where their money is, and to be infested there by mice. Yet however they may be infested, they do not withdraw until they are wearied out, and so at last they work their way out of these tombs. 939. How sordid the fantasies are into which the ideas of thought of the sordidly avarice are turned is evident from their hell, which is deep under the feet. A vapor exhales from it like that from swine whose bristles are being scraped off in a scalding trough. There are the homes of the avaricious. Those who come thither at first appear black, but by the scraping off of their hair, as is done with swine, they seem to themselves to become white. So they then appear to themselves, but still there remains therefrom a mark by which they are known wherever they go. A certain black spirit who had not yet been brought to his own hell, because he had to make a longer stay in the world of spirits, being let down thither, although he had not been so avaricious as the rest, and yet had in his lifetime wickedly panted for the wealth of others, on his arrival, the avaricious there fled away, saying that he was a robber, because he was black, and would kill them. For the avaricious flee from such spirits, being especially fearful of losing their lives. At length, having found out that he was not such a robber, they told him that if he wished to become white, he merely had to have the hair taken off, like the swine which were in full view, and then he would be white. But as he did not desire this, he was taken up among spirits. 940. In this hell are for the most part Jews, who have been sordidly avaricious, whose presence too, when they come to other spirits, is perceived as the stench of mice. In regard to the Jews, something may be said about their cities and the robbers in the desert, to show how miserable is their estate after death, especially that of those who have been sordidly avaricious, and have despised others in comparison with themselves, in consequence of their inborn arrogance in thinking themselves to be the only chosen people. In consequence of having conceived and confirmed in themselves during their life in the body, the fantasy that they shall go to Jerusalem and the Holy Land to possess it, not being disposed to understand that by the New Jerusalem is meant the Lord's kingdom in the heavens and on earth, there appears to them, when they come into the other world, a city on the left of Gehenna, a little in front, to which they flock in crowds. This city, however, being miry and fetid, is called the filthy Jerusalem. And here they run about the streets over the ankles in dirt and mud, pouring out complaints and lamentations. They see these cities, indeed I have sometimes seen them myself, and the streets therein, with all their defilements, represented as an open day. There once appeared to me a certain spirit of a dusky hue coming from this filthy Jerusalem, the gate seeming, as it were, to be opened. He was encompassed about with wandering stars, especially on his left side. Wandering stars around a spirit signifying the spiritual world falsities, but it is different when the stars are not wandering. He approached and applied himself to the upper part of my left ear, which he seemed to touch with his mouth in order to speak with me. But he did not speak in a sonorous tone of voice like others, but within himself, nevertheless in such a manner that I could hear and understand. He said that he was a Jewish rabbi, adding that he had been in that miry city for a long time, and that the streets thereof were nothing but mud and dirt. He said also there was nothing to eat in it but dirt. And on my asking why he, who was a spirit, desired to eat, he replied that he did eat, and that when he desired to eat, nothing was offered him but mud, which grieved him exceedingly. He inquired what he must do, having in vain tried to meet with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I related to him some particulars respecting them, informing him it was in vain to seek for them, and that even if they were found, they could not possibly afford him any assistance. After reverting to matters of deeper import, I said that no one ought to be sought after but the Lord alone, who is the Messiah whom they had despised on earth, and that he rules the universal heaven and the universal earth, and that help comes from him alone. He then asked anxiously and repeatedly where the Lord was. I replied that he is to be found everywhere, and that he hears and knows all men. But at that instant other Jewish spirits drew him away. 941. There is also another city on the right of Gehenna, or between Gehenna and the swamp, where the better sort of Jews seem to themselves to dwell. But this city is changed to them according to their fantasies, sometimes being turned into villages, at others into a swamp, and again into a city. And its inhabitants are much afraid of robbers, but so long as they remain in the city, they are secure. Between the two cities there is a kind of triangular space, dark where are robbers who are Jews, but of the worst sort, who cruelly torture whomsoever they meet. The Jews out of fear call these robbers the Lord, and the desert in which they reside they call the land. As a security against the robbers, at the entrance into the city on the right, there is a good spirit stationed, in the extreme corner, who receives all comers, and before whom, as they arrive, they bow themselves toward the earth. They are admitted under his feet, this being the ceremony of admittance into this city. A certain spirit approaching me suddenly, I asked whence he came. He replied that he was making his escape from the robbers whom he feared, because they kill, slaughter, burn, and boil men, inquiring where he might be safe. I asked whence he was and from what country. In his terror, he dared not give me any other answer than that it was the Lord's land, for they call that desert the land, and the robbers the Lord. Afterwards, the robbers presented themselves. They were very black and spoke in a deep tone of voice like giants, and strange to say, when they come, they induce a sense of dread and horror. I asked them who they were. They said they were in quest of plunder. I inquired what they meant to do with their plunder, and whether they did not know that they were spirits, and therefore could neither seize upon nor amass plunder, and that such notions are the fantasies of the evil. They replied that they were in the desert in quest of booty, and that they torture whomsoever they meet. At last they acknowledged, while they were with me, that they were spirits, but still could not be brought to believe that they were not still living in the body. Those who thus wander about are Jews, who threaten to kill, slaughter, burn, and boil whomsoever they meet, even though they are Jews and friends. Their disposition was thus made known, although in the world they dare not divulge it. 942. Not far from the filthy Jerusalem there is still another city, which is called the Judgment of Gehenna, where those dwell who claim heaven as due to their own righteousness, and condemn others who do not live according to their fantasies. Between this city and Gehenna there appears as if there were a rather handsome bridge of a pale or gray color, where there is a black spirit whom they fear, and who prevents their passing over, for on the other side of the bridge appears Gehenna. 943. Those who in the life of the body have made mere pleasures their end and aim, loving merely to indulge their natural propensities, and to live in luxury and festivity, caring only for themselves and the world, without any regard to things divine, and who are devoid of faith and charity, are after death first introduced into a life similar to that which they had in the world. There is a place in front towards the left, at a considerable depth, where all is pleasure, sports, dancing, feasting, and chatting together. Hither such spirits are conveyed, and then they know no otherwise than that they are still in the world. After a short time, however, the scene is changed, and then they are carried down to a hell beneath the buttocks, which is merely excrementitious, for in the other life such exclusively corporeal pleasure is turned into excrement. I have seen them there carrying dung and bemoaning their lot. 944. Women who from low and mean condition have become rich, and in their pride have given themselves up to pleasures and a life of delicacy and ease, reclining on couches like queens, sitting at tables and banquets, and caring for nothing else, when they come into the other life, have wretched quarrels with one another. They beat and tear each other, they drag each other by the hair, and become like furies. 945. It is otherwise with those who have been born into the pleasures and enjoyments of life, and who have been educated in such things from childhood, such as queens and others of noble family, and also those of wealthy parentage. These, though they have lived in luxury, splendor, and elegance, provided they have lived at the same time in faith in the Lord and charity towards the neighbor, are among the happy in the other life. For to deprive oneself of the enjoyments of life, of power and of riches, and to think thus to merit heaven by wretchedness, is a false course. But to esteem pleasures and power and riches as nothing in comparison with the Lord, and the life of the world as nothing in comparison with celestial life, this is what is meant in the word by renouncing these things. 9:46. I have spoken with spirits concerning the fact that possibly few will believe in the existence of so many and such wonderful things in the other life, in consequence of the absence of any but a very general and obscure conception, amounting to none at all, of the life after death, and in which men have confirmed themselves by the consideration that they do not see a soul or spirit with their eyes. Even the learned, although they say there is a soul or spirit, so cleave to artificial words and terms, which rather obscure or even extinguish the understanding of things than assist it, and so devote themselves to self and the world, and but rarely to the general welfare and to heaven, that they believe still less than do sensuous men. The spirits to whom I spoke marveled that men should be of such a character, seeing that they are well aware of the existence in nature itself and in each of its kingdoms, of many wonderful and varied things about which they are ignorant, as, for example, those in the internal human ear, concerning which a book might be filled with things amazing and unheard of, and in the existence of which everyone has faith. But if anything is said about the spiritual world, from which come forth all things in the kingdoms of nature, both in general and in particular, scarcely anyone gives credence to it, on account, as before said, of the preconceived and confirmed opinion that because it is not seen, it is nothing. Chapter the Ninth. Continuation concerning the hells. Here concerning other hells distinct from those previously described. Number 947. Those who are deceitful and who suppose that they can obtain all things by deceitful craft, and who have confirmed themselves in this idea by their success in the life of the body, seem to themselves to dwell in a kind of tun at the left, which is called the infernal tun, over which there is a covering, and outside of it a small globe on a pyramidal base, which they conceive to be the universe under their inspection and rule. Precisely thus does it appear to them. Those of them who have deceitfully persecuted the innocent are there for ages. I was told that some have remained there already for 20 ages. When they are let out, they are possessed with such fantasy that they suppose the universe to be a globe, about which they walk and which they trample with their feet, believing themselves to be gods of the universe. I have seen them at times and spoken with them about their fantasy, but as they had been of this nature in the world, they could not be withdrawn from it. I have also at times perceived with what subtle deceit they could pervert their thoughts, turning them in a moment in other directions and substituting others, so that it could hardly be known that it was done by them, and this so naturally as to be beyond belief. Being of this character, these spirits are never admitted to men, for they infuse their poison so clandestinely and secretly as not to be noticeable. 9:48. There is at the left another tun, as it appears to them, in which are some who in the life of the body had supposed that when they did evil they did good, and the converse, so that they had made good to consist in evil. These remain there for a while, and then are deprived of rationality, on the loss of which they are as if asleep, and what they then do is not imputed to them. But yet they seem to themselves to be awake. On their rationality being restored to them, they return to themselves and are as other spirits. 9:49. Towards the left and in front there is a certain chamber in which there is no light, but mere darkness, from which it is called the gloomy vault. In it are those who have longed for the goods of others, continually hankering after them, and also, whenever possible, getting possession of them without conscience under some specious claim. There are some there who, when they lived in this world, had been in stations of much dignity, but had based the respect due to sagacity on wily practices. In that vault they consult together, just as when they lived in the body, how to deceive other people. The darkness there they call delightful. I was shown the appearance of those who are there and had acted fraudulently. As in clear daylight, I saw what they at last come to. Their faces are more hideous than those of the dead, ghastly in hue like a corpse, and pitted with horrible cavities, the result of living in the torment of anxiety. 950. There was a phalanx of spirits rising up from the side of Gehenna on high towards the front, from whose fear it was perceived, for the quality of spirits may be perceived from their sphere alone at their first approach, that they accounted the Lord as vile, and held all divine worship in contempt. Their speech was undulatory. One of them spoke in a scandalous way against the Lord, and was at once cast down towards one side of Gehenna. They were being carried from the front up overhead, in the endeavor to meet with some with whom they might conjoin themselves, in an attempt to reduce others to subjection. But they were stopped on the way, and were told to desist, because the attempt would be hurtful to them, so they came to a halt. Then they were seen. They had black faces and had a white bandage round their heads, by which is signified that they regard divine worship and therefore the Lord's word as black, and useful only to keep the vulgar under the restraint of conscience. Their abode is near Gehenna, where are flying dragons, not venomous, from which it is called the habitation of dragons. But because they are not deceitful, their hell is not so grievous. Such spirits ascribe all things to themselves and their own prudence, and boast that they fear no one. But they were shown that a mere hiss would terrify them and put them to flight. For on a hiss being heard, they thought in their terror that all hell was rising to carry them off, and from heroes they suddenly became as women. 951. Those who in the life of the body have thought themselves holy are in the lower earth before the left foot. At times they there appear to themselves to have a shining face, which flows from their idea of their own holiness. But the outcome with them is that they are kept in the most intense desire to ascend into heaven, which they suppose to be on high. This desire is increased and is turned more and more into anxiety, which grows immensely until they acknowledge that they are not holy. And when they are taken out of that place, they are enabled to perceive their own stench, which is very offensive. 952. A certain spirit supposed that he had lived a holy life in the world, because he was esteemed as holy by men, and so merited heaven. He said that he had led a pious life, and had spent much time in prayer, supposing it to be sufficient for each person to look out for his own interests. He also said that he was a sinner, and was willing to suffer even to being trodden underfoot by others, which he called Christian patience, and that he was willing to be the least, in order that he might become the greatest in heaven. When examined in order to see whether he had performed or had been willing to perform anything of good, that is, any works of charity, he said that he did not know what these were, but only that he had lived a holy life. But because he had as his end his own preeminence over others, whom he accounted vile in comparison with himself, at first because he supposed himself to be holy, he appeared in a human form shining white down to the loins, but was turned first to a dull blue, and then to black. And as he desired to rule over others, and despise them in comparison with himself, he became blacker than others. Concerning those who desire to be greatest in heaven, see above number 450, 452. 953. I was led through some abodes of the first heaven, from which I was permitted to see afar off a great sea swelling with mighty waves, the boundaries of which stretched beyond the range of vision. And I was told that those have such fantasies and see such a sea with fear of being sunk in it, who have desired to be great in the world, caring nothing whether by right or by wrong, provided they could secure their own glory and renown. 954. The fantasies which have been indulged in the life of the body are turned in the next life into others, which, however, correspond to the first. For example, with those who have been violent and merciless on earth, their violence and unmercifulness are turned into incredible cruelty, and they seem to themselves to kill whatever companions they meet, and to torture them in various ways, wherein they take what is to them the greatest possible delight. Those who have been bloodthirsty take delight in torturing other spirits, even to bloodshed, for they suppose spirits to be men, not knowing otherwise. At the sight of blood, for such is their fantasy that they, as it were, see blood, they are greatly delighted. From avarice there break forth fantasies as if they were infested with mice and the like, according to the species of avarice. Those who have been delighted with mere pleasures, having these as their ultimate end, as their highest good, and as it were their heaven, find their highest delight in staying in privies, perceiving there what is most enjoyable. Some take delight in urinous and noisome pools, some in miry places, and so on. 955. Moreover, there are penalties of various kinds with which in the other life the evil are most grievously punished, and into which they run when they return to their foul lusts, and by which they contract shame, terror, and horror for such things, until at last they desist from them. The penalties are various, being in general those of laceration, of usurpation or pulling to pieces, of sufferings under veils, and many others. 956. Those who are tenacious of revenge, and who think themselves greater than all others, regarding them as of no account in comparison with themselves, suffer the punishment of laceration in the following manner. They are mangled in face and body until there is scarcely anything human left. The face becomes like a broad round cake, the arms look like rags. And these being stretched out, the man is whirled around on high, and all the time towards heaven, while his character is proclaimed in the presence of all until shame penetrates him to the inmost. Thus a suppliant, he is compelled to beg for pardon in terms that are dictated to him. Afterwards he is carried to a miry lake, which is near the filthy Jerusalem, and is plunged and rolled in it till he becomes a figure of mud. And this is done repeatedly until such lust is taken away. In this miry lake there are malicious women belonging to the province of the bladder. 957. Those who in the life of the body have contracted a habit of saying one thing and thinking another, especially those who under the appearance of friendship have longed for the possessions of others, wander about, and wherever they come ask whether they may stay there, saying that they are poor. And when they are received, they from innate desire long for all they see. As soon as their character is detected, they are driven out and fined. And sometimes they are miserably racked in various ways, in accordance with the nature of the deceitful simulation which they have contracted. Some being racked in the whole body, some in the feet, some in the loins, some in the breast, some in the head, and some only in the region of the mouth. They are knocked backwards and forwards in a way that is indescribable. There are violent collisions of the parts, thus pullings asunder, so that they believe themselves to be torn into small pieces, and resistance is induced to increase the pain. Such punishments of deception take place with great variety, and at intervals are repeated again and again, until the sufferers are penetrated with fear and horror at false statements made with an intention to deceive. Each punishing takes away something. The deceptors said that they are so delighted to punish that they are not willing to desist, even should it go on to eternity. 958. There are troops of spirits who wander about and whom other spirits greatly dread. They apply themselves to the lower part of the back and inflict torture by rapid movements to and fro which no one can prevent and which are attended with sound. And they direct the constrictive and expansive movement upwards in the form of a cone with its point at the top. And whoever is introduced within this cone, especially towards the top of it, is miserably racked in every least part of his limbs. It is deceitful pretenders who are introduced into it and so punished. 959. I awoke in the night from my sleep and heard spirits about me who desired to ensnare me in my sleep. Yet presently dozing, I had a sad dream. But having awakened, punishing spirits were suddenly present, at which I wondered, and miserably punished the spirits who had snared me in my sleep. They induced on them, as it were, bodies, visible ones, and bodily senses, and thus tortured them by violent collisions of the parts to and fro, with pains induced by resistance. The punishers would have killed them if they could, so that they used the most extreme violence. Those guilty were for the most part sirens, concerning whom, see number 831. The punishment lasted a long time, and extended around me to many troops, and to my astonishment all those who had snared me were found, though they wanted to hide themselves. Being sirens, they tried with many arts to elude the penalty, but could not. Now they sought to withdraw into interior nature, now to induce the belief that they were others, now to transfer the punishment to others by transference of ideas. Now they counterfeited infants who would thus be tortured, now good spirits, now angels, besides making use of many other artifices, but all in vain. I was surprised that they should be so grievously punished, but perceived that the crime is enormous from the necessity of man's being able to sleep in safety, without which the human race would perish, so that it is necessary that there should be so great a penalty. I perceived that the same takes place around other men whom they attempt to assail insidiously in their sleep, although the men know nothing about it. For one to whom it is not given to speak with spirits and to be with them by inner sense can hear nothing of the kind, still less see it, when yet the same things happen with all. The Lord guards man with most especial care during his sleep. 960. There are certain deceitful spirits who, while they lived in the body, practiced their wiles in secret. And some of them, in order to deceive, have by pernicious arts feigned being, as it were, angels. In the other life, these learn to withdraw themselves into a finer or more interior realm of nature, and to snatch themselves away from the eyes of others, and in this way they suppose themselves to be safe from every penalty. But these, just like others, undergo the penalty of deception in accordance with the nature and the wickedness of their deceit. And in addition to this, they are closely bound together, and when this happens, the more they desire to loose themselves, that is, to tear themselves away from one another, the more tightly they are fastened. This penalty is attended with a more intense torture because it answers to their more hidden deceptions. 961. Some persons from habit and some from contempt make use in familiar conversation of the things contained in the Holy Scripture, as an aid or formula for joking and ridicule, thinking thus to give point thereto. But such things of Scripture, when thus thought and spoken, add themselves to their corporeal and filthy ideas, and in the other life bring upon them much harm, for they return together with the profane things. These persons also undergo the punishment of deception until they desist from such things. 962. There is also a penalty of deception in respect to the thoughts, so that the interior thoughts fight with the exterior, which is attended with interior torment. 963. Among punishments, a frequent one consists in the throwing a veil over the sufferers, and is as follows. By means of fantasies that are impressed on them, the sufferers seem to themselves to be under a veil that is stretched out to a great distance. It is like a closely clinging cloud that increases in density in proportion to the fantasy, and under which, incited by the desire to burst out of it, they run hither and thither at various rates of speed, until they are wearied out. This usually lasts for the space of an hour, more or less, and is attended with different degrees of torment in proportion to the degree of the desire for extrication. The veil is for those who, although they see the truth, yet under the influence of the love of self, are unwilling to acknowledge it, and feel constant indignation that the truth should be so. When under the veil, some feel such anxiety and terror that they despair of the possibility of their deliverance, as I was informed by one who had himself been delivered from it. 964. There is also another kind of veil in which the sufferers are wrapped up, as it were, in a cloth, so that they seem to themselves to be bound hand, foot, and body, and there is injected into them a burning desire to unwrap themselves. As the sufferer has been wrapped round only once, he supposes that he will easily be unwrapped. But when he begins to unwrap himself, the veil increases in length, and the unwrapping goes on without end until he despairs. 965. These things relate to the hells and to penalties. Infernal torments are not the stings of conscience, as some suppose. For those who are in hell have had no conscience, and therefore cannot suffer torment of conscience. Those who have had conscience are among the happy. 966. It is to be observed that in the other life no one undergoes any punishment and torture on account of his hereditary evil, but only on account of the actual evils which he himself has committed. 967. When the evil are being punished, angels are always present who moderate the punishment and alleviate the pains of the sufferers, but cannot take them away. For there is such an equilibrium of all things in the other life that evil punishes itself. And unless it could be taken away by means of punishment, those in whom it exists could not but be kept in some hell to eternity, for they would otherwise infest the societies of the good, and offer violence to the order established by the Lord, on which the safety of the universe depends. 968. Certain spirits had brought with them from the world the idea that they must not speak with the devil, but flee from him. But they were instructed that it would do no harm at all to those whom the Lord protects, even if they should be encompassed by all hell, both within and without. This it has been granted me to know by much and by marvelous experience, so that at length I came to have no fear of even the worst of the infernal crew to hinder my speaking with them. And this was granted in order that I might become acquainted with their character. To those who have wondered that I spoke with them, I have been permitted to say not only that this would do me no harm, but also that the devils in the other life are such as have been men, and who, when they lived in the world, passed their life in hatred, revenge, and adultery, some of them being then preeminently esteemed. Nay, that among them are some I had known in the bodily life, and that the devil means nothing but such a crew of hell. And furthermore, that men, while they live in the body, have with them at least two spirits from hell, as well as two angels from heaven, and that these infernal spirits rule with the evil, but with the good have been subjugated and are compelled to serve. Thus it is false to suppose that there has been a devil from the beginning of creation, other than such as were once men. When they heard these things, they were amazed, and confessed that they had held a totally different opinion in regard to the devil and the diabolical crew. 969. In so great a kingdom, where all the souls of men from the first creation flock together, from this earth alone nearly a million coming every week, and each person among them all having his own individual genius and nature, and where there is a communication of all the ideas of everyone, and where, notwithstanding all this, all things both in general and in particular must be reduced into order, and this continually, it cannot be but that numberless things exist there which have never entered into the idea of man. And as in relation to hell, as well as in relation to heaven, scarcely anyone has conceived more than one single obscure idea, it cannot be but that these things will appear strange and wonderful, especially from the fact that men suppose spirits to have no sense of feeling, although the truth is that they feel more exquisitely than do men. And what is more, have induced on them by evil spirits, by artifices unknown in this world, a sense of feeling almost like that of the body, but much less gross. 970. The subject of vast stations will follow on at the end of this chapter. Chapter 9. Verse 1. And God blessed Noah and his sons, and said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth. 2. And let the fear of you and the terror of you be upon every beast of the earth, and upon every bird of heaven, even to everything that the ground maketh to creep forth, and to all the fishes of the sea. Into your hands let them be given. 3. Every creeping thing that liveth shall be for food for you, As the esculent herb have I given it all to you. 4. Only the flesh with the soul thereof, the blood thereof, shall ye not eat. 5. And surely your blood with your souls will I require. At the hand of every wild beast will I require it. And at the hand of man, homo, even at the hand of man, vir, his brother, will I require the soul of man, homo. 6. Whoso sheddeth man's blood in man, his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God made he man. 7. And you, be ye fruitful and multiply, bring forth abundantly in the earth, and be ye multiplied therein. 8. And God said unto Noah and to his sons with him, saying, 9. And I, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your seed after you. 10. And with every living soul that is with you, the fowl, the beast, and the wild animal of the earth with you. Of all that go out of the ark, even every wild animal of the earth. 11. And I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of the flood, neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. 12. And God said, This is the sign of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living soul that is with you, for the generations of an age. 13. I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a sign of a covenant between me and the earth. 14. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. 15. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living soul of all flesh, and the waters shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. 16. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will see it, that I may remember the eternal covenant between God and every living soul of all flesh that is upon the earth. 17. And God said unto Noah, This is the sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. 18. And the sons of Noah that went forth from the ark were Shem, and Ham, and Japheth. And Ham is the father of Canaan. 19. These three were the sons of Noah, and from these was the whole earth overspread. 20. And Noah began to be a man of the ground, and he planted a vineyard. 21. And he drank of the wine and was drunken, and he was uncovered in the midst of his tent. 22. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father, and told his two brethren without. 23. And Shem and Japheth took a garment, and laid it upon their shoulders, both of them, and went backward, and covered the nakedness of their father. And their faces were backward, and they saw not their father's nakedness. 24. And Noah awoke from his wine, and knew what his younger son had done unto him. 25. And he said, Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be to his brethren. 26. And he said, Blessed be Yahuwah, the God of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. 27. May God enlarge Japheth, and he shall dwell in the tents of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. 28. And Noah lived after the flood 350 years. 29. And all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. The contents. Number 971. The subject that now follows is the state of the regenerate man. First, concerning the dominion of the internal man and the submission of the external. 972. Namely, that all things of the external man have been made subject to and serviceable to the internal. Verses 1 to 3. But that a special care must be taken lest the man should immerse the goods and truths of faith in lusts, or by the goods and truths which are of the internal man should confirm evils and falsities, which must of necessity condemn him to death and punish him. Verses 4 and 5. And thus destroy the spiritual man or the image of God with him. Verse 6. That if these things are avoided, all will go well. Verse 7. 973. It next treats of the state of man after the flood, whom the Lord had so formed that he might be present with him by means of charity, and thus prevent his perishing like the last posterity of the most ancient church. Verses 8 to 11. 974. Afterwards, the state of man subsequent to the flood, who is in the capacity to receive charity, is described by the bow and the cloud, which he resembles. Verses 12 to 17. This bow has regard to the man of the church, or the regenerate man. Verses 12 and 13. To every man in general. Verses 14 and 15. Specifically, to the man who is in the capacity of being regenerated. Verse 16. And consequently, not only to man within, but also to man without the church. Verse 17. 975. It treats lastly of the ancient church in general. By Shem is meant internal worship. By Japheth, corresponding external worship. By Ham, faith separated from charity. And by Canaan, external worship separated from internal. From verse 19 to the end. This church, through the desire to investigate of itself the truths of faith and by reasonings, first lapsed into errors and perversions. Verses 19 to 21. Those who are in external worship separated from internal deride the doctrine of faith itself in consequence of such errors and perversions. Verse 22. But those who are in internal worship and in the external worship thence derived put a good interpretation on such things and excuse them. Verse 23. Those who are in external worship separated from internal are most vile. Verses 24 and 25. And still they may perform vile services in the church. Verses 26 and 27. 976. Lastly, the duration and state of the first ancient church are described by the years of Noah's age. Verses 28 and 29.